The Bloodstream podcast is made possible by Takeda and is intended for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. Please consult with professionals before making any healthcare decisions.
None of us were experts in hosting fundraising events through a pandemic. It took a lot of learning. We joke on our team. It sort of felt like we were building the plane while we were flying it a little bit.
That voice belongs to Elizabeth Molnar. She is the manager of chapter development and fundraising for the National Hemophilia Foundation, and she joins Amy and me later in the show to discuss the Unite for Bleeding Disorders Walks, which will occur in over 40 cities across the U.S. in 2020 with one mission: to raise funds and awareness for local chapters and help them increase education, support services, and advocacy efforts in their community. That sounds like important work, and I'm sure it's faced many challenges in this virtual everything year. How do you do a walk virtually? I don't know, but Elizabeth does, and she will be here in just a little while to explain. However, before she does that, allow me to do this, and that's say hello and welcome to the Bloodstream podcast. I am your host, Patrick James Lynch, joined this week, as I am, as always, by my colleague and Believe Limited's director of outreach, and perhaps maybe, just maybe, my professional innovator, Miss Amy Board. Good morning, Amy. How are you? What's going on in your world on this? We're recording this on Wednesday. How are you doing this fine Wednesday morning?
Oh my gosh. I just want to say that was a lovely introduction. I didn't know that. It means a lot.
I try to keep you primed for like, okay, here it comes. Here's the part where he mentions me. So if I make it different, then I know I'll lock you in.
And I you could have gone many ways with that. And I guess it was out of the blue. It's great. I'm doing well.
I'll have many opportunities. Well, good. That's good. Did you catch The Bachelor?
Okay. No, I did not catch The Bachelor yet because we're watching it tonight. And get this, we're COVID style watching The Bachelor outside in our backyard. Like, we're setting up a TV out there because we have some friends that we always watch The Bachelor with, and we're social distancing watching The Bachelor together. I'm not making this up. This is how important it is. And it's all we have left in this time, in this pandemic, is The Bachelor. And so I'm excited about it. Listeners, I hope you are as well. It's terrific television.
What's wonderful, Amy, is you haven't seen it this week, so you can't spoil anything.
No.
And I have never watched a single episode. So for people like me, give us your 30-second pitch on why we should watch The Bachelor this week. Why is it that important?
I'll tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. Let me just state for the record that I believe there are two types of people in America, not the world, America, those that watch The Bachelor and those that do not. And I just want to say, as a part of the percentage that watches The Bachelor, I believe you, Patrick, as the percentage that doesn't watch The Bachelor, are above us all. Like, I think your choice is sound, and I agree. However, it's just a human experiment, and I think it's hilarious. And in my humble opinion, I think there are, because it's a human experiment, they put these people in a bubble. You're starting to understand, as you get more into it, what the bubble does to people.
Yeah.
And there is it's 100% television. So I would say like 80% of it is just like television. And there's like people on there that are giving you television. They were cast because they would be television.
Yes.
And then at the very end, you watch people date, like actually date, and like three people at once, and they go insane. And it's a human experiment, and I love it. I love it. And I am sad that I love it so much. But I do have a pocket of friends that love it as well. And if you're going to watch trashy television, you can't watch it alone. You have to have friends. And anyway, I'm just saying.
Wow.
It's all we have left in this pandemic. Maybe you should watch it, PJL.
You know,
that's all I'm saying.
I don't know if that was an endorsement for the show or a compliment to non-show watchers. I'm not sure if I should feel sad for you, but you're also having a socially distanced party with friends you have through this thing. So it's all very compelling, and it gives me a lot to think about. But we'll move on from The Bachelor now. I did want to point out, in addition to The Bachelor, you know, you mentioned it's all we have going, in part because last weekend we executed a bunch of things we no longer have going. On Friday was the Rare Impact Awards that we've been talking about for a little while. That took place.
Yep.
And thank you, Nord, for that honor and for featuring Hemophilia the Musical. That was really, 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 really cool. Saturday, we had our World Mental Health Day screening of Let's Talk with folks from the Courageous Parents Network and the Mighty and the Rare Disease Film Festival and Global Genes, all participating to make that happen. We shared Let's Talk with over 1,000 people across the 72 hours from World Mental Health Day through Tuesday when we took it down. It was only up for those few days for a special public showing. It'll maybe be up again before the end of the year. You'll have to stay tuned or go to letstalkmh.com to learn more. And then on Sunday, to cap off the weekend, speaking of bubbles, the Los Angeles Lakers won the NBA championship. LeBron's now got three finals MVPs on three different teams. Never been done before. Come get some. Really big weekend. A bunch of stuff that has now come to a close. So I guess you could choose to pick up and watch The Bachelor if you would like. But Amy, before we watch The Bachelor, I actually wanted to chat with you about something that I read only this morning. I think it was published yesterday or the day before, and it's called The 100 Days Agenda, a patient-first blueprint that NHF participated in the creation of, along with 32 other organizations who in total represent millions of people with pre-existing conditions. And the goal was to come up with a list of priorities and to give those to both the Biden and Trump campaigns, as well as to distribute amongst state and federal lawmakers. So I want to mention what those four priorities are and then talk to you about what this exactly may or may not do in just a moment, after first letting everybody know that the Bloodstream podcast is made possible this week by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. And you know what? Amy, Takeda, they have a website. And it's called bleedingdisorders.com. It's really something. Mm-hmm. Bleedingdisorders.com. And you can download a free copy of the Hello Factor magazine from bleedingdisorders.com. You can learn more about Factor 8 and 9 deficiency and all the other ones. I just chose those two for brevity at bleedingdisorders.com. And Amy, you'll never believe it. There is a disease management page. And on that page, there's a whole section about being prepared for emergencies, including an ER checklist that you can just print, fill out, and have ready. Just in case. Check that out, along with tips for dieting, career building, and speaking with your doctor at bleedingdisorders.com. One more time for those still getting a pen, that's bleedingdisorders.com.
What a great resource. Thank you, Takeda.
Woo woo. All right. So the 100 days agenda. So 100 days, you know, you'll often hear like in my first 100 days. Because that's often like a way that a president sort of makes known or a campaign makes known their top priorities. When I first get into office, this is something I'm really going to focus on. So this is called the 100 Days Agenda. And here are the four priorities that it kind of boils down to. Preserving and strengthening access to Medicaid, a crucial lifeline that serves one in five Americans, and removing roadblocks that were created to reduce patients' ability to obtain health care using this vital program, number one. Number two, rolling back the expanded availability of non-compliant and insurance-like products, which resemble insurance but provide insufficient coverage and discriminate against those with pre-existing conditions. Also, totally fair, number two. Number three, improve access to high-quality coverage available in the marketplace through extended open enrollment periods, increased subsidies, and more support to help patients understand their insurance options. Also sounds excellent, three for three so far. And the fourth, eliminate surprise medical bills, which are devastating to families and discourage patients from receiving needed health care. Yes and yes. And those are the four priorities. Amy, I guess my question to you is this going to matter? You know, like putting something like this together feels important, and obviously we need to protect patients. We got to do everything we can. These organizations in total represent millions of people. But knowing that, for example, the president currently doesn't even read the daily briefing, why should we think that the campaign is going to care about this? And on the Biden side, do we think this has a chance to move the dial on what's likely already preconceived notions around what they would like to do with healthcare if they are to take the White House? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, making change and, you know, enlightening and engaging decision makers at a federal level is a, you know, multi-tiered effort. And stuff like this, a coalition that that comes together of chronic disease groups, rare disease groups, making priorities known is one of those steps. To have something to refer to in terms of this is what the chronic disease community came and, you know, landed on, agreed upon. These are our priorities for our community that serve X percentage of Americans is very important. But there is a follow-up that I think this, a report like this sets us up as a, as community members, as people, as constituents, to go in and speak to our decision makers in Congress about these priorities. Because I think from an administrative, you know, standpoint in terms of the Trump administration or, you know, an incoming Biden administration, I think they're going to have, you know, party ideals that we're going to, you know, have to engage with. But Congress is where we can go as constituents and actually tell our stories about, here's the deal. You know, here's what the priorities are, and this is why it means something to me as an American, as a mother, as a patient, as a child, as a grandmother. And those stories are actually recorded in those offices. And I, you know, there is a great Ask the Expert interview that I did in 2019, I think. It was 2019, either March or April.
I can barely remember back to that year.
I know. I was like, when was that?
That was last year.
We actually spoke to a former staffer, a federal former staffer. And basically, we were like, your question, does any of this matter? Does any of it matter? You know, we go in and like, does any of it matter? And I actually was very interested to see what he would say. And his name is Bruce Barnum. He was wonderful. And he gave a detailed telling of what those story, how they collect those stories in a congressman's office. Everything gets shared. So as a decision maker, you can see, and of course you're going to battle, you know, party lines, you're going to battle party ideals, but something like this, a report like this, is really a tool for us as community members to go in and have something to speak towards. And so it's a part of it. Like, do I think the report is going to change minds? Absolutely not. But do I think ourselves as a chronic disease community, those living with hemophilia, do we have the power to change minds? 100%.
Right.
And as a hemophilia community, it's only stronger to have those other conglomerate, you know, chronic disease organizations. I remember in Colorado, my mentor, my like public policy mentor, I loved her so much. Her name was Sharon O'Hara. She was the president of the MS Society. And she was like this chronic disease warrior in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And she realized, you know, I don't know how many years ago, that when she went in and actually talked about MS patients, like it didn't matter. But if she went in there as a chronic disease collaborative and said, you know, 60% of our population has chronic illness, that's when they started to be like, oh, so like numbers matter and collaborations matter. And so that's my thought.
You know, and a couple other points. So I appreciate all of that a lot. And a couple other points you made that I just want to underscore. Having this down on paper like this, it also gives us within our community and the other 32 community, well, HFA and other bleeding disorders organizations are here, but all the millions of people represented by this, a consistent message. We now have consistent priorities. So whether it's bleeding disorders, Washington days, or it's MS, let's bother our legislators day, or whoever's day it is to go in there and go, hey, we're saying the same thing over and over and over and over. And that's extremely powerful. And to your point that you made also, all of these are recorded. So it's the same point being made and recorded over and over and over again. And the other thing that comes to mind is you mentioned story. And if we have now these four different priorities, well, could we look at each of those and have a story? So if I'm organizing, you know, Hawthorne in Los Angeles local lobby days, then I would go to my neighbors and knock, and I'd say, here are the four things. Do you have a story that is like the epitome of why these surprise bills are absolutely devastating, as said here? And then we can emotionally engage the people we speak to with these stories while also having the facts and figures behind us, to your point about numbers matter, to support that this isn't just the story of my neighbor. This is the story of actually millions of people. So, I'm glad that I asked you if we could talk about this morning, because you've helped me feel better about this document, because it is important, and I know it's important, but when I first saw it, I was just like, but who's going to do anything with it? And you answered that question. We are the people to do something with it.
Yeah.
And that's an important point.
And, you know, just for all of us to be aware, You know, I think next year, Washington Days, I have no idea what it's going to look like in terms of COVID virtual. But regardless of who is in office, it is imperative that we show up. And it won't, Washington Days will not be canceled. You know, if it'll be a virtual thing, you know, I have no idea what it'll look like. Right.
Yeah.
But every time, you know, you see all these things on Instagram about call your representatives today or email your representatives. That stuff matters and it counts and it adds up. So if you see something that you're passionate about, it's not a waste of time. It's not a waste of time. Mm-mm. And all of that stuff is counted and calculated. And it is so important for you to know who your representatives are, because as a constituent, you are voting them in or out of office. And that matters to those people. And they represent us. So I've always said this. I don't believe that it is their job to know what it's like to have hemophilia when they get elected. I don't believe that they should know that.
It
is our job. Absolutely. It is our job to let them know what it's like living with hemophilia, von Willebrand's disease, a very rare, chronic, expensive disorder. It's up to us to show what it's like. And we've made that change already. You know, the ACA was 100% built on communities like ours.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a strong, you know, visibility on the Hill, and we should continue. Mm-hmm. So anyway, be on the lookout for Washington Days, because you're probably not going to have to travel this year, so everybody can be involved. And no one has to dress up. I doubt we even have to dress up. And no
Well, I don't know. Maybe from the neck up or from the waist up.
That's
we might
right.
have to do a partial
dress
up.
Oh my gosh, you can wear like a tie or like a nice blouse, but then you can wear your jammy pants.
Do you think when the Supreme Court was hearing cases virtually that any of the justices from the waist down were not dressed as they would be dressed were they actually in the Supreme Court? Or do you think they all went like full commitment, we are Supreme Court justices and it doesn't matter?
That's one of the best questions that has been like laid in front of me lately. And I'm going to be honest with you. I hope for the sanity of our country that they all wore jammy track pants. Like I hope that was the case.
One other way that you can make sure to get your voice heard, in addition to becoming an ambassador of the 100 Days Agenda, a patient first blueprint, is to respond to the Blue Sky Initiative from NHF. I've spoken about it on here before, but a little birdie has made me aware that adult men in particular have not been responding in big numbers. So let's change that. I certainly, as I posted about in some of the closed Facebook groups this morning, I see plenty of grievances, and plenty rightfully so, with our national organizations. So here you go. Here is a chance to weigh in a really meaningful way while NHF is decidedly looking for input to help chart the course of our future. So you can follow the links on hemophilia.org, or you can click the link in the program notes. And of course, another great way to advocate, as Amy was just alluding to, is to vote. We are now going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by NHF's Elizabeth Molnar. Amy and I are now joined by NHF Manager of Chapter Development and Fundraising, Elizabeth Molnar. Welcome, Elizabeth, and thanks for coming on to Bloodstream today.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So we asked you to come on to talk about the Unite for Bleeding Disorders walks, how they're going, how 2020's changed them. But I first want to just kind of take a step back to let people know a little bit more about you. So could you share just a little bit about yourself? How long have you been in this role with NHF, and what's your connection originally to the bleeding disorders community?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually have worn quite a few hats since being at NHF. So I've been at NHF for a little over 3 years. I actually started in a role over on the advancement team. I was the manager of annual giving. Was in that role for about a year. Then I transitioned over to the walk program. So I was the manager of the walk. And then from there, with a little bit of restructuring, I became a manager of chapter development and fundraising over on the chapter services team. So I've had a few hats at NHF, but it's been a great ride. And actually, you know, it's a funny story. Before I came over to NHF, I didn't think I had any connection to the bleeding disorders community.
Oh, I hear a little bit of a tease there. I didn't think. Yes, I hear a little bit of a tease.
So Then I started, and I was one day, I was probably about 3 months into my new role, had just started at NHF. I was chatting with my mom one day, and we were just having a very open conversation. And I did not know, but I have a family member who is a carrier, whose grandfather, not on my side, had hemophilia. So it was just the craziest turn of events, thinking I didn't have a direct connection, right. But knowing that I did. So yeah, it's been a crazy ride, but a very good one.
It's funny how sometimes even just talking about your work with family, I mean, I've had that experience too, talking with strangers about, you know, what I do. And then before I know it, I'm being put in touch with somebody that they know, who it's a stranger to a stranger. I don't even know who this person is, but it's funny how that's how awareness raising and advocacy can work sometimes. Okay. One quick follow-up, given that you have had a few of those different hats. So in your current position, and maybe with a bit of an eye toward the walks themselves, what have you learned working in these different disciplines within NHF that have equipped you for this role and maybe, again, have set up the walks for particular success?
Yeah, I love that question. I think the biggest thing is just everything is so, it's mission-driven, right? Everything we do, whether we're doing fundraising through annual giving campaigns or we're fundraising through the walk, it's just, and coaching our chapters on how to fundraise through the walk program. I think the biggest thing is just the chapters are doing such incredible work across the country, and working with them to really highlight that and show that, and just those impacts that they make in the community. I think that's been the biggest thing, is just, my gosh, we do so many programs and incredible work within the bleeding disorders community. And I love that we get to highlight that no matter how we're fundraising. It's really just, it's an incredible opportunity to highlight that work.
I do too. And I have to mention, I think it's an anomaly, especially in the larger chronic rare disease state, to have a regional chapter network like we do that's not housed all under the national network. All of these, you know, the majority of the organizations are their own 501c3, and how the national organization has made it a priority, a financial priority, to help build those organizations for the local communities, to see how important that is really, really inspiring. And the growth of the chapter services team is a testament to that. So just hats off to you guys. I think it's really important, and the work that we feel at the local community really is served and supported by the national organization.
And where do the walks come into all of that, Elizabeth? How important are the walks themselves within a chapter's annual fundraising goals? And maybe also, how did they, I believe we're near 12? How did this get started in the first place too?
Yeah, so the walk has had a really kind of incredible story. I came on, it came over to NHF right around the time that the walk was being rebranded. So for those individuals who are listening that have been, you know, have seen the walk over the course of the last 12 years, it has a new look, it has a new feel. And when that rebrand happened from the hemophilia walk to Unite for Bleeding Disorders walk, that shift was really created, you know, in the hopes that we were developing that program to be more all-encompassing. You know, we wanted there, it was for all bleeding disorders. And that was really the emphasis on switching the brand of the walk and really calling it the Unite for Bleeding Disorders walk for all bleeding disorders. So that was the past. So that the rebrand happened in 2017. Before that was the hemophilia walk. But in terms of the importance of the walk program across chapters, for most chapters, it's the number one revenue source, or their largest revenue source, I should say. So chapters put a ton of work and emphasis on the walk program every year. We have our walks really have emphasized that 365 days of engagement too, which has been incredible. So yeah, the walk has really grown to be a very robust program, and our chapters have done an incredible job with it.
So knowing it's got such an important place, what did you and your team and the respective folks at the chapters have to figure out this year with COVID? I imagine, and we're also talking about different chapters, different states all around the country. So it's not even like if you make a decision about a national program, it's one decision. We're making a decision about a bunch of different local programs. So can you just take us through how you managed all of that?
Yeah, it was a wild ride. The funny thing is, and I think it goes without saying, none of us were experts in hosting fundraising events through a pandemic. It took a lot of learning. We joke on our team, it sort of felt like we were building the plane while we were flying it a little bit. But I would say, and I think this is just the beauty of the team, our relationship with the chapters, is that we really worked collaboratively with the chapters to identify what they wanted the walk to look like, right? I think we had all finally hit a point where we realized that in-person walks, for the most part, just weren't going to happen. So It really stemmed out of like a lot of direct collaboration and conversation with our chapters. And that's how we came up with the idea of Unite Day. It was really out of chapter conversations. You know, can we do and can we have one unifying day where we are walking from coast to coast? And out of that idea, like I said, it stemmed Unite Day, which happened this past Saturday. We had over 20 walks happen virtually. From coast to coast. And it was just a really incredible, powerful day that was really stemmed out of ideas we got from our chapters.
How much money did you guys raise over the weekend?
To see totals, but I will say it was the power of that day and to see and to feel that there were people walking all over the country. To me, that was the success. I mean, we joke because I started the day in Houston, went over to Pittsburgh, went over to Sacramento, down to Hawaii. So, I mean, to me, I think that was truly the success of the day, was just feeling that sense of community and togetherness. When unfortunately we don't have a lot of togetherness now, because of the pandemic. So yeah, we have a couple more walks coming up. And that's where we'll dive a little bit more into like the exact numbers, but we are so proud of our chapters and what they were able to accomplish, thus far.
And Elizabeth, can you explain a little bit the walk model for some folks that might be unaware, that we call it peer-to-peer fundraising, team fundraising, what the importance of that, and you know, the awareness generating, like the storytelling generating that community members can have. Tell us a little bit about the model of the walk.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, it's peer-to-peer fundraising. So essentially what peer-to-peer fundraising is we always say we're not asking people for a donation, right? We are asking people to ask their people for donations. So we really are casting a net. We're bringing people into the community and onto our walk teams. Our teams raise the bulk of the funds for the walk program, which is incredible. So it's really, it's not about me making a donation necessarily. It's me reaching out to my network and finding those champions within my own network. And that's really been what makes peer-to-peer fundraising successful. And our bleeding disorders community has been incredible at really rallying their own champions to raise funds for the bleeding disorders community. And like you said, Amy, one of the things that our chapters put a ton of emphasis on is sharing those stories. And I think, kind of reflecting back on what's really been successful and what fundraising has been successful through this virtual world that we live in. And it's that, it's those people that have reached out and shared their story on Facebook and why fundraising is so important. And our chapters highlight those incredible stories too. So it's interesting in this virtual world, it's really kind of helped us share those stories across the country. So it's been really powerful just to see how those stories are being shared and the impact that they're making.
I agree. In my experience as the ED of Colorado, it was the one chance a year that our community members had like an opportunity to share, like, this is what it was like, you know, when my son was diagnosed, or this is what it was like for me when I was diagnosed with VWD. And it was really, really powerful. Yeah, so that's so. I love the walk program. I love that we're able to talk about this.
Me too.
Elizabeth, I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier. There's still a few more walks to take place this year, and you, the Unite Day was only a few days ago. So it's not like there's been much time to debrief, assess, talk about what happens going forward. That being said, I'm going to ask you an unfair question. Have you learned anything already about the virtual Unite for Bleeding Disorders walks that might teach you something about going forward, how regardless of a pandemic, we may do the walks with either a little differently or with this additional feature?
Yeah, I love that question. And I love that I'm talking, I love that we get to talk a few days following Unite Day, because I feel like I've actually had a lot of time to really think about this and reflect on those lessons learned. And I would say the biggest thing that I have learned throughout this process is the unique opportunity it has really provided our chapters to reach, to expand their reach, right? So it's interesting in physical walks, like when you're able to meet in person, it's somewhat limited in a lot of ways because we have a lot of chapters that are the only chapter in that state, right? So if your walk is in, the southwest part of the state, if you live on the opposite, I mean, it's really hard to attend. And it is difficult in a lot of ways to engage on something like the walk. What we've learned is that we've been able to reach out and engage those individuals, those families, those community members outside of maybe that like direct area, service area. We've seen so much more engagement across the state, which to me has been so eye-opening, because we always talk about, we should have virtual walks, we should do this, but this has forced us to do it. So I think moving forward, what I'm really excited about is I always see there being a virtual nature to walks, even when we're in person, because we just saw our reach is so much greater when we can provide those virtual elements to engage everyone. So, where you live isn't going to hinder you from really, truly engaging in the walk program. And that's what I'm most excited about.
So that's really interesting. Amy, from that chapter perspective, thinking about, because I think you also represented Montana as well in Colorado, or didn't you represent another, or doesn't Colorado also encompass another state?
No, the HTC does. The chapter is just Colorado. But we did have rural, issues. It would differ. Like, a lot of people would not participate in the walk because they wouldn't go. They're like 4 hours away across a mountain pass, and like they wouldn't, drive down for that.
So, so I don't mean this as a leading question, though it may sound like one, but to Elizabeth's point then, do you think if you were in a position where you could have offered people either some way to be involved in this physical walk, or if it's too far away or work or whatever the case may be, do you think people would have responded to a virtual component if that was available during your time?
I think, to be completely honest, I don't think so pre-COVID. I think COVID has opened the eyes of the possibility of it. And Elizabeth can, speak to this as well, that I think, next year, if walks are in person, I do think people will be like, oh, there's a virtual component that we can participate in. And they'll like understand that that's a thing. So I don't know. That's just from my chair.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think just the unique opportunity this has really provided in, of course, obviously trying to find the light in the dark in what is a situation none of us want to be in. But I think the unique opportunity it has really provided is it's taught us to how to engage on that virtual platform, right? And how, people attended last year virtually, they're comfortable with it. So like, let's take that into next year and for years to come. So yeah, I completely agree with you. We tried to talk virtual walk prior to this, but not only did we not know it 100%, the community didn't quite understand and know how to engage virtually. But now I think we're all at least some level of a virtual expert with everything going on. So yeah, I completely agree with you, Amy.
Elizabeth, for the few more minutes that we have with you, I want to just zoom out for a second to talk a little bit more broadly about fundraising and development at Chapters. We're in middle October, 2.5 months of this year left. Of course, looking at next year and Q1 probably more closely than Q4 because it's extremely hard to think about where the world may be 12 months from now. What conversations are you in with chapter leadership about fundraising and development, closing out the year? I know, you know, the holiday season is often a big time for giving and there's campaigns around it. What are the conversations that you're in right now?
Yep. So I think the biggest thing, and obviously keep going back to virtual, but I think the biggest thing is that, and again, a big opportunity is that, you know, in peer-to-peer, but I think fundraising as a whole, you know, we have these campaigns and the campaign comes and then it's over. But I think the unique opportunity in this virtual atmosphere is that we can continue. I mean, we have chapters that are continuing to push walk fundraising, even though they had their virtual walk on Saturday. To me, there's less of that like closing out the final nature of virtual events. So I think it's just continuing that outreach and continuing to relay that impact. And just that, you know, we're not, a lot of times when you have a physical walk, it's really hard to continue to push fundraising because there's that kind of final nature to an event. We have chapters that are still have their foot on the gas pedal, working on how they incorporate fundraising throughout the end of the year. So I would say it's just continuing to do that outreach, continuing to keep your foot on the gas pedal and the fact that it doesn't feel final. I mean, you can keep engaging your community because we're virtual. So I would say that's the biggest thing with our chapters. It's just continuing the path and continuing their fundraising efforts and not being afraid to ask. I think that's another big hurdle that we've had to work on overcoming. I mean, myself too, it's not being afraid. I think when the pandemic first hit, it was, well, I don't want to ask people. And I totally understand that. But I think our chapters have done a great job in going and finding the helpers. I always joke because I have a quote from Mr. Rogers on my desk. I'm from Pittsburgh, big Mr. Rogers fan, but there's essentially a quote I think most people know about. It's about finding the helpers when there's bad in the news or scary in the news. And I try to remind myself that. And I think a lot of our, you know, in talking to the chapters, you know, yeah, there's going to be people that aren't going to be able to help right now because the pandemic has hit us hard in all different kinds of ways. But don't be afraid to look for the helpers and look for those people because they're out there and they're going to support the incredible mission of our chapters. And it's just remembering that too. So I would say that was one of the biggest things in terms of continuing that fundraising.
So where can people go to learn more about the Unite Walks?
Yeah, so I encourage everyone to check out our website. It's uniteforbleedingdisorders.org. Like I said, we're continuing fundraising. So if you see your local chapter on there, don't be afraid to sign up as a team. You can still fundraise through the end of the year for 2020. Also encourage people to check out our Unite Day site. So that's our event landing platform. And that is nhf.swugo/UniteDay2020. Every chapter has their own unique chapter page. So encourage people to check that out. We have some really cool videos, one from our CEO, one thank you video that features all chapters across the country. So definitely encourage people to check that out as well.
I'm going to need that second website one more time, though, because there was a word in the middle there that I've never heard and will definitely spell incorrectly. So can you give us that second website one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's nhf.swugo, that's SWOOGO.com/UniteDay2020.
Perfect. Okay, that I can follow. Thank you very much for that. So that's where you can go for more or to uniteforbleedingdisorders.org for more on the walk program. Elizabeth, thank you for coming on just a few days after Unite Day to share this with us and the listeners. And I know I learned a bit more about the walk and some of the intricacies, so I know that means other people have as well. So thanks for taking the time to do that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Hey, reminder, everybody, you can learn more about the Unite Walks and find a Unite Walk near you by going to www.uniteforbleedingdisorders.org. Again, that is www.uniteforbleedingdisorders.org. Get involved, raise money for your local community, and bring awareness to your own personal circle, which is really a valuable part about the walks.
And that, my friends, is all for this episode. Special thanks to everyone at Bloodstream Media and Believe Limited who makes the Bloodstream podcast possible. And thanks as well to Elizabeth Molnar and to our presenting sponsor, Takeda. Visit GrabAPenBleedingDisorders.com to learn more about their work and resources. Subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast wherever you listen if you haven't already. Leave us a rating in the Apple Store. Share this episode with a friend. Word of mouth is literally the best way we reach new people. Have a topic that you would like to hear us discuss? You want to share your bleeding disorders story on the podcast? Do you have a pain odyssey that you would like to tell us about for the pain podcast? Well, you can email mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com and just put whatever it is you want to talk about right there in the subject line, and we will read and get back to you. Have a chronic pain story to share? We already talked about that. Leave it in. Connect with Bloodstream Media on social media. You will find Bloodstream Media on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Or you can follow Amy Board or Patrick James Lynch on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users out there. Check out the show notes for this episode in your podcast player or on bloodstreammedia.com, where you'll find links and information related to the stories and segments featured on this episode. I am your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am your host, Amy Board.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.
Bye.